here's a story from The World.
Now to Myanmar. Yesterday was one of the bloodiest days there since the military seized power in a coup 6 weeks ago. At least 38 people were killed, most of them in Myanmar's largest city, Yangon. The rising death toll, at least 125 since protests began, have many in Myanmar asking why they're fighting the coup makers alone and why the United Nations is not coming to help. The World's Southeast Asia correspondent Patrick Nguyen has the latest.
Every day, every night, in cities across Myanmar, the sounds of battle. But it's not a battle. Only one side has weapons. Soldiers or cops will just pick some unarmed protesters and open fire, often aiming at their heads. So when people aren't protesting, they're going to funerals. Here's one for 23-year-old Nini Ong Thet, a man shot dead 2 weeks ago in Yangon, the country's largest city. Mourners who didn't even know him came to cover his casket in flowers. And the last thing Nini Ong Thet posted on Facebook, how many bodies, he wrote, until the UN takes action.
I think that that is a very valid and very important question.
Chris Sidoti was with the UN for many years, tracking human rights abuses by Myanmar's army, which he admits mostly go unpunished.
The people of Myanmar can rightly feel badly let down by the United Nations and its agencies.
And yet this resistance, at least a big part of it, is still trying to summon the power of the UN, invoking something called R2P, Responsibility to Protect. It's a promise all UN member states have made to stop crimes against humanity. R2P is now a battle cry on Myanmar's streets.
We need R2P!
We need
R2P!
We need
R2P!
We
need
R2P!
We need R2P. For many, this means send armed intervention. Well, Sidoti says, don't expect UN peacekeepers in blue helmets anytime soon, or ever.
I think that an armed intervention would not be wise in Myanmar. We've seen armed interventions go badly wrong in Afghanistan and Iraq, and I wouldn't wish that on the people of Myanmar under any circumstances.
Foreign forces backed by the US and other Western powers surging into the country. Well, Myanmar's generals have been obsessed with that scenario for ages, ever since 1948, when the country kicked out British colonizers. They would fight to the death. And just to make things more complicated, that's a training video from one of the dozens, yes, dozens of smaller independent armies in Myanmar, indigenous armed groups defending their homeland, mostly in the mountains. They are well armed, even with missiles. And if there's an intervention by Western powers, some of those armed groups would join it, but others are supported by China and may resist it. Meaning, any Western-backed invasion could start a very nasty, very complicated U.S.-China proxy war. An even worse nightmare, Sidoti says, that no one would want.
Just think back to the early days of the Iraq intervention when people warmly welcomed the American and other troops, the Coalition of the Willing. That didn't last long.
The last time the UN's responsibility to protect was invoked was in Libya in 2011, when it was bombed by the US, the UK, and France to get rid of a different regime. And now Libya is in terrible shape, ruled by warlords and militia. The US Secretary of State, Anthony Blinken, was probably thinking of places like Libya and Myanmar this month when he said, yes, America does want to promote democracy,
but we will not promote democracy through costly military interventions or by attempting to overthrow authoritarian regimes by force. We've tried these tactics in the past. However well-intentioned, they haven't worked.
Still, you can understand why some protesters in Myanmar would want outside help. They are up against a military whose leaders believe they are the soul of the nation, and those opposing them are traitors. This army is solid. It has honed its killing skills for 70 years, trying to conquer indigenous people through jungle warfare. Chris Sidoti says they have a brutal track record.
The total situation in Myanmar requires an examination not of what has happened since the 1st of February, but what has happened over years.
The 1st of February was the date of the coup. Back in 2017, Sidoti was on a UN fact-finding mission, investigating the army's violent purge of 700,000 Muslims, Rohingya Muslims. Now that, he says,
Is exactly the kind of mass atrocity that the R2P is directed towards. And that's part of a continuing story in Myanmar.
That mass atrocity, that genocide, It didn't invoke the UN's responsibility to protect, R2P. Should it now? Yes, Sidoti says, but armed invasion is the most extreme end of R2P. It can also justify other types of intervention, all of which he supports, as does his new independent group, the Special Advisory Council for Myanmar, led by Sidoti and two other former UN officials. They have a lot of sway with the UN. So what are they suggesting?
I would say first, a global arms embargo. Some countries already have an arms embargo, but without a global arms embargo, the removal of the supply lines is not possible.
That would mean getting China and Russia to stop selling weapons to Myanmar's army. Not easy. Sidoti's group also wants total sanctions on the military, their families, and their businesses. Meanwhile, people in Myanmar have funerals to attend. In this funeral, in a city called Mechina, the body of yet another young man, Zin Min Thet, is passed around in a glass casket as a martyr. This is happening every day, alongside a general strike, with millions refusing to go to work. The perseverance, Chris Sidoti says, is incredible.
The people of Myanmar themselves are seizing their own future.
It's also clear that while some in Myanmar call for help, these hundreds of thousands of people aren't going to sit around waiting for the UN to save the day. For The World, I'm Patrick Nguyen.